Okay. We're still in Revelation 13, and we're camping out on the Antichrist, and this is probably part three, I believe. And the question before we dig into some of the aspects of the Antichrist that I have is part of the application as well, and the principle. And here's what it is. Personally, will sometimes, on some occasions, God give you what you want, even if it doesn't really help you?
Yes.
Yes?
Yes.
You're sure about that? Even if you're not praying about this, but the intent in your life is you are constantly wanting something, and eventually will He give that to you, even though you're not praying about it, but you're constantly desiring it in your life?
Yes.
You say yes to that?
It's on your walk.
Is it? But what if it's a bad thing?
Yes.
Will He allow you to do that?
Oh, yeah. He'll allow you to see.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
But remember the Matthew 7 in the Sermon on the Mount? Let me read it for you. Look what Jesus said. Be given to you, seek and you will find, knock and the door will be open to you. That's the context, right? Okay. Look what He says. If you then, being evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father who is in heaven give good things to those who ask Him?
Sometimes you need to learn by experiencing, because you won't learn any other way, and He'll let you learn it even if it's hard.
So if I pray, I keep praying about something, and I want this. I want this to happen in my life, whether it's a job or a career move or something, whatever, some relationship to heal or whatever. I don't know. You keep praying about it, praying about it. And He just said in Matthew 7 that what kind of parent would give their child a serpent if they asked for bread? Don't you know your Heavenly Father would give you good things if you asked for it? But then, you say you're praying, but what you're wanting, you don't know, but it could be detrimental to you. Would He still go ahead and give it to you, knowing that it would still, perhaps, send you down the wrong path?
If it suits His purposes?
Man, you guys are, that's easy, man. That's an easy answer.
Brandon, we do the same thing with our children. Sometimes we say,
so go ahead and play in the street, that's fine, and right? And you'll learn how a car feels. I've told you over time and time again. Right? No? Does God let His kids play in the street? I mean, if they're old enough, obviously, I mean. Right? If they choose to play in the street?
They're already in the street, he'll just send a small car to be a little
small. A hybrid. I've seen those people driving around. Have you seen them? This car is smaller than a Volkswagen Bug. Have you seen that thing? I don't know how they fit into it.
They call them smart.
Yeah, they call them smart. I laugh at them every time. And then they have, you know, a bumper sticker on the back, Sierra Club, and the other bumper sticker says coexist with all the religious symbols and stuff like that. And like, okay, they've checked out.
I think the way you framed the question, if God would allow you to have things that you shouldn't have, even if they're good things.
Even if they're good things.
You know, that caveat is an interesting way to phrase it.
Even if it's good, I guess, from your perspective.
Yeah, and that's where I was driving. I've had instance after instance in business where I've done things that I've done on my own will. And I'll tell you what, you know, in the Greek it says it very, very specifically. It says, He'll spank you up straight.
Yeah. Yeah, Hebrews chapter 12 says He will definitely spank you.
Many times I've prayed about it. I bought a piece of property, and I prayed about it, but I wanted it. Okay?
Yeah.
There were roadblocks all along the way for this. Finally it happened.
We finally got it.
Sure. You know.
Yeah.
And then I got ready to invest money in it to develop it for what I do, and I got valley fever.
Yeah.
Thank God, because 2 years later we went into this recession, and I would have been broke.
Yeah.
So he let me have he allowed me to get what I wanted.
Right.
But then he protected me from myself.
Yeah, protect you from the consequences of it.
Yeah. And that's a very humbling.
Ah, yes. That is the intercessory of the high priest of the Lord, where he...
Does he give us what we want? I don't think so.
He gives us taste of what we want.
I think he allows us.
Yes.
Because we do have a free will. We are a free moral agent. And we have the ability to do those things.
We do.
Take that away from us.
Yeah, and if you exercise your free will to such an extent that you manipulate the circumstances to get what you want, you can get what you want, so to speak. There'll be a high price to pay. There'll be some compromises along the way of your Christianity. But if you very are determined to get something, you can probably do it. It'll take some time, might take years, but you'll probably get there. And here's what you got to be careful about. If that thing takes you closer or further away from the Lord. Most often, if it's an unhealthy desire, if the motives are not right, and sometimes clearly your motives, you don't even know your own motives sometimes, of why you're doing, sometimes you'll cloud your motive with a superficial motive. You can tell everybody, but deep down inside it's a different motive. If you go after something, a life pursuit, whatever it is, with the wrong motive, that motive is what you end up with, and God says, now look what you've done. You've got it, now are you happy? I always use this illustration, and it was about Troy Aikman. You guys obviously are familiar with Troy Aikman, but he wrote in one of his books he was talking about that his whole life pursuit was to be an NFL quarterback and win the Super Bowl. That was his life pursuit. And guess what? He did it. And he won the Super Bowl. So he won the Super Bowl that first time the Cowboys won with him. Guess what he did after the Super Bowl?
Disney.
He went to Disneyland, right? Which is actually going to Hades, in effect. So that's not actually a good... It's not the happiest place on the earth for a parent. There's no happy parents there. Let's just put it that way. It's just... It's just... some bad experiences, man. So anyway, all that to say is... He got there, he won the Super Bowl, they gave him the MVP trophy, did his thing, I'm going to Disneyland at the end of it, and that was what they were doing in the 90s, right? He then went to his hotel room by himself and cried all night long. Why? You just won the Super Bowl!
Because it wasn't fulfilling.
He had nothing else in his life.
That was it.
It's done.
It's done. And he got to the point, the highest pinnacle in football, and he says, it's empty. I had it. Here's the trophy, the MVP, the whole thing. I'm on top of the world. You can't get better than world champ. And he cried all night like a baby because that was it. It was empty. He goes on to win more after that, obviously, but he realized something in his life. Now, I don't know if Troy Aikman's a Christian or not, but even he woke up to the fact that his goal was really missing the mark. That really was not what life was about winning Super Bowls, because he did it and it didn't satisfy him. It was empty. God will sometimes allow you to have that in your own personal life. If you continue to pursue something with an ill motive or whatever, you eventually will get it. And then you will have to live with the consequences. There's so many people, I'll say this as a pastor, that are irritated with other people. They just don't like other people. They're not friendly. They don't want to be around anybody. They don't want to talk to anybody. And I know who they are. They come to church. They go slide in, slide out, never go join a Sunday school class. They're here. They keep to themselves. And their whole motivation sometimes is to just be alone, not be bothered by anybody. And guess what? They get their wish. They are alone. They're so lonely, then they finally start complaining about it because they're so lonely. But they say, well, the kids don't call. No one from my church makes a call. They don't care about me. I'm all alone. And then you want to say, no, 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 you don't understand. You have lived 20, 25 years like this of pushing people away. Don't be surprised by the results you get. You didn't want anybody in your life. Now you want people. It's too late. And they wonder why they're so alone. That's tough. That's a tough one because we got to be careful about this. Now I move from the personal into a bigger application. Absolutely, God will give you things that probably are not beneficial to you. He'll allow it. The two examples I will cite from the Old Testament is giving Israel a king when they didn't need one. And Samuel goes, Lord, what am I going to do? They keep asking for a king. You should be our king. We don't need a king. All right, Samuel, they want a king? Let him have it. And he gave him Saul. This is before David, right? And so Saul made a mess of things, a huge mess of things. But he looked good. He's tall and handsome. We want to be progressive like the other nations who have kings. We're so backwaters, we don't even have a king. Give us a king. And God says, I'll give him a king. Here you go. But here's what the king will do to you. He will raise an army. He will build his government off your backs. He will tax you. He will take your sons and daughters, and he will do this and this and that. And he outlines it in 1 Samuel chapter 8. At another previous time, the Israelites came to Moses, and we're sick and tired of the, what do you call it? That's the English word for manna, right? We're sick of the whatchamacallit. That's actually what manna means, whatchamacallit. What do you call it? We don't know what do you call it. They didn't know what to call it. So manna means what do you call it? We're sick of the what do you call it, which tasted like coriander seed, and they would fry it in oil and probably tasted like a donut maybe at the end of it. We're sick and tired of it. We like the fish and the meat we had and the onions and leeks back in Egypt. Moses, we demand something. Moses goes before the Lord. I can't take them anymore. I'm sick of the complaining. Kill me right now. That's what he says. Read the text in Numbers 11. Just kill me right now. I can't handle this anymore. I'm ready to die. I'll lay down and then you can kill me. And God says, no, you. Here's what I'll do. I'll give them it. They want their meat. I'll give them meat. They'll have manna. And not for one day, not for 10 days, not for 20 days, not for 30 days, but an entire month. And they'll have so much of it, it will literally come out of their nostrils, and by the end of the month, they'll be sick and tired of the quail, because I will send them quail. And what did he do? He sent them quail. When they partook of the quail, the generation that didn't have any faith, many of them who took the quail died by eating it. Because there was a judgment inherent in the request. They requested something they shouldn't have. They should have been settled with the manna, but they wanted more. And the manna had everything in it. It had all the nutrients, protein, carbohydrates, all the whole thing for them the last 40 years in the desert, but they wanted more. And he gave it to them. So two examples from the Old Testament of showing, I will give you sometimes what your hearts desire. Now to my bigger point. Does a government of a nation, the rulers, reflect the people, or are the rulers of any country disassociated with the people as far as what they feel, what they believe, what they hold? From a biblical perspective, what is typically the principle about a nation's rulers? Isaiah 3 says this, that typically the rulers reflect the people. That rulers are given to a nation because of what the people want, because of what the people are doing, and because of the morality of the people, God will give them that kind of ruler.
Did it have to be a 40 years in the desert if these people hadn't been so sniveling and so stupid? Could God, I mean, they could have gotten to the promised land much sooner, right?
Or was it something that... At year two, they could have went into the promised land. But because of apostasy at Kadesh Barnea, of not wanting to go into the land, and we talked about this last week, about them seeing giants in the land, and they literally saw huge people in the land. Because of that, that is when that generation apostatized. And what I mean by apostatized is that they didn't lose salvation, but they were physically judged that they were going to die in the desert and never see the promised land. That's the nature of apostasy, is they stop continuing in faith. That's it. I'm done.
So
that whole generation was cursed at Kadesh Barnea of saying, then everyone over 20 is not going to enter the promised land and will die in this desert. The reason it lasted 40 years is that's how long it took for that generation to die in the desert that was over 20. Everyone under 20, except for Joshua and Caleb, were allowed to enter into the promised land, but it took 40 years to get basically kill them off. Now, God could have struck them dead immediately, but he obviously didn't. He let them die a natural death, but that was their punishment for that apostasy. So yes, they could have went earlier, but it didn't work because of the apostasy of that generation. Moses, Aaron, and Miriam were part of that apostasy.
How stupid are people? I mean, they see all the miracles God did to get them out of Egypt. They see the Red Sea part, they walk through it, and they don't have enough faith to do whatever. I mean, for most people, that would be enough to say, you know what, whatever you want, no matter what you say, I'll do it.
Yeah, it's amazing. You look back at hindsight, and you have to be scratching your head as a believer, and you and I have never seen a Red Sea part or any type of miracle activity like that.
It's not just them, though. We're just as stupid.
But I think what you see from the miracles is miracles don't bring faith. It never has. Miracles, by nature, are not intended to increase people's faith. They're actually there to authenticate what God is doing. And then you'll see explosions of miracles at certain epochs of time. The Exodus, obviously, and then even with the Lord Jesus Christ when he's on earth. The reason Jesus is doing miracles is to prove who he is, to authenticate that he is the Messiah. It wasn't there to cause faith. If you're going to believe in the Messiah, that's already, he's told them. They have Moses and the prophets. If they don't believe them, they're not going to believe someone rising from the dead, a miracle of someone coming back from the dead. So faith is predicated on your belief in the scriptures, not on a miracle. Because why? Satan can perform miracles. So if you say, I'm going to believe because I see a miracle, then Satan can do all kinds of miracles. And he does, counterfeitly. And we'll see with the Antichrist, that's exactly what he does, is counterfeit miracles. He has a simulated resurrection and things of that nature. Perhaps it will claim a virgin birth and things of that nature. So here's my point. Israel was getting rulers because of the people's desire. Eventually in Isaiah, they were giving rulers called children. I'll give you children as rulers because of their condition spiritually. Now we move to the Antichrist. In one perspective, you can see that the Antichrist is given to the world because this is what the world is desiring. And so in a lot of ways, God is giving humanity what they want. And what does humanity want?
They want to be taken care of.
Someone to solve their problems. That's a good point. Want to be taken care of. Yes? It's good, valid. What is actually humanity wanting? Those are good, valid points.
Anything but God.
Anything but God is a good point. It goes back to your understanding of Genesis and the rebellion of Adam and Eve. What did Adam and Eve want by partaking of the fruit?
Be like God.
Be like God. What does this mean to be like God? You can be like God if you take the fruit. It's the basic premise behind today. Power, autonomy, in that power, like God, but to not be under the rules of God. That's a key understanding. People want the power of God. They want the autonomy to be able to do what they say and to be able to live forever without rules. And that doesn't work. Not in God's economy. You will not be able to live forever without rules or making up your own rules. That's the basic problem with humanity. And this is why they desire an Antichrist. In some senses, you can see this, and we talked about the world religion gathering together of one umbrella of the world religions. What does all the one world religion say? You can worship God any way you want. There are many paths to God, they'll say. It doesn't matter what you call him. It's all the same person or thing or whatever they believe God is. So as long as you believe in quote-unquote God, then you're cool. And you let live the Muslims who can build mosques on 9/11, and you let live the Buddhists or the Mormons, and we're all going to the same happy place. What is that? The basis of that is I can live forever with my own set of rules. And that's Adam and Eve.
The reason that they have that idea is because it is the law that shows us our sin.
Right.
It's the rules that our sin, our shortcomings before Christ. So if they can mask it with their own power and their own idea of God, I've actually heard people say that God is who you make it.
That's right. God is whoever you make it. As long as you believe in God, well, what person are you going to run into except the college professor that doesn't believe in a God? I mean, the college professors are the atheists, let's call them, are basically college professors. You're talking about 1% of 1% of the entire nation. Most people you talk to on the street says, I believe in God. Wait a second, is that enough to believe in a higher power? Like Tom Cruise? The God of Tom Cruise is a false idol, right? Because you know what Tom Cruise's God lets him do? Anything he wants to. That's what the God of Tom Cruise lets him do, or John Travolta, and then what's his wife that had a baby in a bathtub or something like that? And what, Preston, she's Kelly. Why do they like that so much? Because no one's telling them what to do, and they can still believe they're spiritual. So God says, I'll give you the ultimate of what you want. I'll give you a man that's, we looked at last week, that's half of a man and half of a demon, or at least half, you know, he's offspring of Satan. And you can have your no rules, because he will be the ultimate man of lawlessness. And that's what he's called, isn't he? He's called the man of lawlessness. Why is he called lawless? He breaks the commands of God. If you want to practice homosexuality, the man of lawlessness says, go right ahead. You want to worship many gods? He says, go right ahead. You want to worship no gods? Go ahead. Because he's the man of lawlessness. He's the culmination of what all human beings have been desiring from their sin nature. We want to call our own shots. God, get out of my life. And he will lead that charge. And God gives him the man of sin. Now, here's the thing. And here's the basic premise we've talked about. When God gives you what you've been desiring, sometimes you get burnt by him. Or burnt by, not by God, but by the thing that you're desiring. You get burnt by it. And guess what? The world is going to get burnt. Light up their world when this man of sin, because they have never seen evil like this. Let me get through what we're going to see from him. We talked about supernatural origin, counterfeit Messiah. I won't go through this real quick. I want to get to some other aspects of him. The character of an Antichrist. First of all, he will always have access to the satanic and demonic realm because he is the seed of Satan. He always has access to this. This is why he can do counterfeit signs and wonders. He will accept the offer Jesus rejected. What was the offer Satan gave to Jesus if he would just bow a knee to him? I'll give you all these kingdoms. They're mine. I'm the God of this world. I'll give them to you. Just bow a knee right now. And what did the Lord say? It is written. You should serve the Lord your God and Him alone. Right? Every time He fired back Scripture. The man of sin says, I will take that offer. And he will bow a knee. And Satan will give him the kingdoms of the world. Once he accepts the offer, Antichrist will cause him to rise politically and religiously in power. We have a lot of scriptures to go with that. But here's the basic gist of this. Somehow, he comes out of nowhere from this political background we see in Daniel. And he has associated with him religious power as well. We notice, you'll see in the scripture, he's an atheist. He doesn't believe in any gods. But yet he will use religion as the glue to hold his empire together. Oh, much like Constantine did with Christianity. He will have supernatural occultic abilities. And I want you to turn to Daniel chapter 8 because we're going to read this passage. Daniel chapter 8. Daniel chapter 8, verses 23. Y'all there? And in the latter time of their kingdom, when the transgressors have reached their fullness, so that the transgressions of people have reached the fullness, so that God's going to permit, a king shall arise having fierce features, who understands sinister schemes. Might want to underline that. Sinister schemes. What does that mean? It is a reference in the Hebrew to the occult. This man, or demon man, understands the demonic and satanic world like no one has ever done. Let me ask you this question. Do demons and Satan have power? You better believe they do. There is an attractant for people to get involved in the occult because of the power associated with it. This is why there's a phenomenon among teens to be involved in witchcraft or covens, even dabble in Ouija boards, occultic practices, palm reading, tarot cards, whatever it is. And there's a whole mess of teenagers that are stuck in this and playing around with it, but they don't understand the power associated with that world. That's why God forbids it. You're not to be involved in it. There is an attractant to it because of the power involved in it. There is power. It's not God's power. It's satanic. But nonetheless, there is power. He has the ability to have full access to this realm. Now, I don't know about you, but I've been around people who have access to this realm called mediums. And they're not pleasant to be around. There's something going on in them that's very, very evil. A lot of times when I'm around them, and I knew who they were because they've been with Anton LaVey and the Church of Satan and things of that nature. When you left them, the feeling I could explain is you felt confused. And you end up scratching your head and saying, what happened? It's that kind of feeling. Very diabolical. Very weird. Nonetheless, but I can tell you this. I couldn't see it, but my spirit sensed an incredible darkness. A darkness I can't even explain. It's so dark when you see through the person's eyes. Because the eyes, they say, windows to the soul. When you look into this person's eyes, I just kept seeing forever darkness. Now, I wasn't looking at a human being. This individual have full access to demonic realm. What that means is he can command demons. He can cause them to do certain things in the world. This is a power that most people don't understand. It's in the occult, and the occult understands this. This is why witches and warlocks or whatever in a coven or Satanists, we practice ritual rites. They're trying to get the demons to do things in their life. Most of us don't understand the nature of the occult because you see it in Halloween and you think, it's just a kid's joke. If there was a Satanist working with you, you would not know it. If there was a hardcore warlock or witch, you would not know it. They are not out in the open wearing pentagrams or 666 all over there. They don't do that. They look like normal people, average Joes that you don't know anything about. They're not stupid to tattoo it all over their face. They're very smart, very intelligent, but they're very wicked. Very wicked. They're not going to tell you that. When they try to do things in their rituals, they're trying to cause demons to do things, like I said, in their lives, in their work, in this, in that. And they're using occultic practices to do that. This man will command it. If he wants something done, the demons follow what he says. And he can command them and tell them to do things because he is the son of Satan. So you're talking about a very evil individual here. Very evil. He will seek to destroy Israel. That's his number one goal, obviously. Now, if you keep reading, his power shall be mighty, but not by his own power. Whose power is it, I wonder? Satan. He shall destroy fearfully and shall prosper and thrive. So he'll make a lot of money, by the way, doing this. He shall destroy the mighty and also the holy people. Who are the holy people? Israel. So now he's going to destroy Gentiles. He's going to destroy primarily Israel. Through his cunning, he shall cause deceit to prosper under his rule. So basically, it's a rule of lies. Why? Because who's his father? The father of lies. So his whole kingdom is built on lies. And he shall exalt himself in his heart, shall destroy many in their prosperity. Oh, he's going to take away their money. I think that's already starting. Taking away our money. He shall even rise against who? The Prince of Princes. He will try to fight Jesus off. But he shall be broken without human means. What does that mean? Christ himself will destroy him. No human will. Go through a few more things. The character of him. He will be crafty and deceitful to lull rulers into a false sense of security. Peace will be his motto. And take advantage of it to the purpose of uprooting them. So here's the deal. If you play ball, you're going to have peace in your country. If you don't play ball, I'll kill you. Now, how you that like that for mob rule? I'll kill you. I'll put a bullet in your head and kill you if you don't comply. Wow. It gets that bad? Yeah. So all these people who think that you can confront evil by sitting and negotiating with them are kidding themselves. You don't negotiate with evil, because evil, all it wants to do is just kill you. Comply or I'll kill you. Here's an interesting thing. We see this along with Islam going on today. If you don't condescend to do what they want, practice Sharia law in London or whatnot, what do they say? We'll kill you. If you make fun of Muhammad on the Comedy Central channel, we'll kill you. But if they make fun of Jesus, what do the Christians do? Turn the other cheek. So they're not afraid to bash Christians, are they? They won't say anything against Islam because they're afraid that some terrorist is going to blow up their building. The guy, the nut job in Florida, that's burning the Quran. Did he do it? I think he did. No, he didn't. He stopped. Okay. You got to remember, he might have been set up, but here's a guy who's a pastor of 50 people. He's off his base, obviously, trying to do this. What he should do instead of burning the Quran is actually read it in public so everyone can hear the violence and hatred and the murder in the Quran. That's what he really should do, is just read it. Just keep reading it in English and it'll come out. But look what happened. 100 death threats from Muslims? Is this a peaceful religion? They put the crucifix in a bottle of urine. And what do the Christians do? Turn the other cheek. I didn't see any Christians saying death threats. The guy who did that, put the crucifix in urine, he didn't get any death threats from any Christians.
He's got to worry about God.
Yeah, he's got to worry about God, obviously. But you didn't see any Christians retaliate and say, we'll just kill you. Mm-mm. So I want you to see, you want to get a taste of the Antichrist? Get a taste from it from the Muslims. That's how they operate, through fear and intimidation. You don't comply, boom, you're dead. And guess what? It works in the Middle East. They have all their people under subjection because they're afraid they're going to die. The women especially, it's a horrible situation. So you're getting a preview of what the Antichrist will look like in a person. It'll just kill you if you don't comply. Mike. Yeah. Open. Yeah.
And he's had several conversations with this friend of mine, and he's portraying it that there's the radical sect of Islam, and there's his sect of Islam, that they're peaceful, and they don't have
peaceful
to go out and do anything that's crazy and off water because they're too busy praying. Pray five times a day.
Right, right. Moderates.
Yeah.
Let me sum it up this way, Mike, and you can give this to your friend. I judge Christianity not by any of us or me. I judge Christianity by this. What does the Bible say? Because quite frankly, if they pull me out and say, we'll judge Christianity based on Brandon, I will disappoint them big time. Oh, Christians do that. I can't believe it. I don't want to be a Christian. Obviously, the adherents of Christianity sometimes don't practice Christianity, obviously, right? So we give a bad witness. So you're better off judging Christianity by its Bible. Same goes for Islam. I don't judge Islam by a moderate in my neighborhood or a moderate who comes on TV and says, we don't practice it. Judge Islam by its writings, the Quran and the Hadith, and I can tell you what that already says. So I want to talk to any Muslim that says, well, we don't practice it. Well, then you're not being faithful to the Quran, because the Quran says you should not have any friends that are Christian Jews. In fact, it says you should behead them in Surah chapter 9. I can point out the verses that say to behead people, cut their hands off if they steal, eye for an eye, things of that nature. All kinds of weird stuff. So I'm not going to judge it by some guy says, well, we don't do that, we're too busy praying. Well, listen, then you're not being obedient to the Quran. What I would say is you're a nominal Muslim. Just like I would say to a Christian who comes on Christmas and Easter, if someone said, well, that's a Christian, what would you say to them? Not by my book. That's what we call a nominal Christian. We don't even know if they're saved or not, but they come on Christmas and Easter. We would call them a nominal Christian. And we would say, don't judge Christianity by them, please. Right? Because you would say that's they're not being faithful to the teachings of Christ.
That's what the world would call a modern Christian, though. A Christian that's open.
Yeah, and they're open.
You can deal with. We are the radicals.
Yeah, we are the radicals.
Because we say that there's only one way to heaven.
So then when you look at the opposite, is someone who practices the Quran faithfully or exactly the people who run planes into our buildings? They are actually following faithfully the Quran. Whereas when you look at a Christian, if you follow the teachings of Christ faithfully, you will look more like him and you will actually turn the other cheek. But if you don't, you'll be like the guys who try to kill abortion doctors and they say they're Christian. Well, that's not the teachings of Jesus. You can see the difference. The closer you get to Jesus, the more peaceful you become. The less you're with Jesus, the more violent you become. And so with the more closer to their teachings to the Quran, the more violent they do become. I can tell you this. I don't have to guess. It's all by their numbers. You want to have a wake-up call? Watch their stats as far as a population and what happens when that population goes up. In America, they're like 1 or 2%, so they're going to appear as moderates. In any country where they appear 1 or 2% of the population, they are moderate. Watch what happens when the population increases. They become more emboldened and more emboldened to where if you at least get 15% of the population, you end up like Saudi Arabia, which is all of them anyway. But you get to that level, then you have death threats of them stabbing a guy in Holland for writing a picture of Muhammad and stabbing him to kill him to death because he wrote a cartoon of Muhammad. You'll get things like that. Watch the population is what really matters. Watch how aggressive they're getting in Europe because of their population's growth. That's what you really need to watch for. You gotta remember, you're in a world that's being controlled by Satan, by the spirit of Antichrist. And what did the spirit of Antichrist's kingdom built on? Lies. He is a master of deceit. So right now, you and I are saying, I can't understand why people can't see this. They're being lied to. They're being deceitful in their presentation of themselves. Yeah.
And this way, they can change the law, because like you say, in Holland, and when you look in our country, we're becoming more and more tolerant to Islamic ways.
Yeah, Sharia.
So you get their people in politics and the judicial system, then the laws can change, and then it'll be easier to enforce them. Sharia law.
They already have judges already, Mike, even in America, they're right now even saying it might be tolerable to for them in their own community to practice Sharia law on American soil. You get that problem going, we got all kinds of issues happening. You'll have women being beat, kids being molested, and there'll be no recourse if a judge starts allowing pockets in the United States to practice their own laws.
If this happened in Hawaii with the Hawaiians already, haven't they been given the
Maybe. I haven't checked into that one. I'll have to look into that one. That's interesting. The precedent's already been set.
The precedent's there. If it hasn't happened, they've been trying to make that happen already. I believe it already has happened.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Earlier, you were saying Satan has the power to perform miracles.
Mm-hmm.
Do his angels, demons, have power, and also angels?
Yes, absolutely. The demons have powers to perform what's called counterfeit miracles. We see this attestation to miracles to them in Revelation chapter 13, and then further on in the campaign of Armageddon, through their cunning and through their miracle working abilities, these demons can gather people for the battle of Armageddon, somehow trick them into coming into it. I don't know what the nature of it, because it didn't describe what the miracles are, but they can do it. Now, experientially, practically, what do we see on the mission fields and stuff like that? We see people who have infirmities. This is a classic case. Someone will have an infirmity, and then a witch doctor or something will come over them, do his voodoo or whatnot, and they get healed. And they'll attribute the healing to the witch doctor or the ritual or the voodoo thing or whatever they do. And but what has happened, really, is the demon has the ability to put an infirmity on somebody and then has the ability to lift it off of them. And so it seems like they've been healed, but really it was the demon who was doing this. You talk to some of our missionaries, they see this all the time. And it causes the people to think, oh, this idol or this certain god tree, whatever it is what made me healed instead of the true God. That one gal I was talking to that worked with Anton LaVey for a long time, since she was a little girl, honestly, she was going around the world doing, she thought, miracles. She was had the ability to heal people. And she said the people would just, you know, stand up and walk and do different things, but it was because of demonic oppression on them to begin with. This is why Jesus warned that it will get so bad, especially in the tribulation period in Matthew 24, that some of the things that will happen would even deceive the elect, if that would be allowed. If God would allow the elect to be deceived, it would deceive the elect. It's that good. It's that good. Yeah.
I was just thinking about all these shows, these weekly shows now, Vampire Diaries and all these other things.
It's all the occult, isn't it?
Try to romanticize to young kids.
Yeah. Let me take this that on a rabbit trail. You're making a good point, and then I got to run. What is the deal with the vampire craze?
It's scary.
Does people know that a Mormon who got occultic revelation wrote the books? She was dictated to by a spirit creature, Edward, she called it. And this Edward told her what to write, and if she made a mistake, Edward corrected her, got her out of bed, she went back on the computer and corrected it. And this Edward spirit creature would not let her rest until she finished the book. And that's the lady who wrote the Twilight series.
What made it so popular?
That has to be. What makes it? And that's the question. And what does it, what makes vampires? No one in here. I'm not going home looking forward to watching Bela Lugosi being a vampire, or you know, Brad Pitt and Tom Cruise in Interview with the Vampire. I'm just not into it. But why are teens into it? Because you've got to understand what's the nature behind vampires. It's saying that they can live on blood, not Christ's blood, but other creatures' blood. It is a substitute for the blood of Christ. That's what the idea behind vampire is. They will live eternally on someone else's blood. By the way, the only blood you're going to live on eternally is the blood of the Lamb. That is it. So Satan has a counterfeit in that kind of idea. It's a way of living eternally on your own rules, on someone else's blood. That's all the basic of it is. And so take it for what it is, but I will say this. When you have automatic dictation by a spirit creature given to you, that's on the level of Joseph Smith. That's on the level of Muhammad, who had auto-dictation for the Quran. Joseph Smith had auto-dictation for the Book of Mormon. And then this lady, who is a Mormon, has auto-dictation for the Twilight series. I don't know about you, but when I find out that issue, I don't think I want to read her stuff. Not that I'm afraid of it, but she got her information from a demon who was called Edward.
It's a love story.
And it's a love story, and then it's just I'm not saying don't read it. In fact, what I do say, as a parent, you better read it. You better know what your kids are reading, and you better know the source of the information. If you realize a woman who is a Mormon, number one, in a cult, had auto-dictation, red flags everywhere. Red flags everywhere. Be careful, because that's how most of the major cults started, with someone saying, it's all wrong, I'll auto-dictate to you, get a pen and write this down. Cults flying off the market.
One of Muhammad's wives, so-called wives, was an 8-year-old girl, and he blessed her.
Yeah.
You're basing your religion on?